From Vox Markets, I'm Anita Riota.
I'm Francesca Morgan.
And you're listening to Spotlight. On today's episode, we're talking about the massive market opportunity presented by off-grid energy solutions. And these are different from your typical energy system that's connected to some central infrastructure or a mainline grid system. Today, around 1 billion people, and that's roughly 13% of the global population, still do not have access to electricity. And add on top of that, another 1 billion people who are not connected to a reliable power source.
According to a recent Wood Mackenzie report that we found, in the next decade, around 600 million people are likely to gain access to electricity, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. However, population growth rates seem on track to outpace these new connections.
And off-grid energy solutions are emerging as a really good alternative. Proponents argue that these systems are more cost-effective, reliable, and sustainable than their traditional counterparts.
To start us off, we reached out to Benjamin Attia. He is a research analyst at Wood Mackenzie Power and Renewables and also the lead author of the report to understand the basics of off-grid energy and essentially how it's changing the face of the energy sector.
When I was doing my research, I found all these great statistics, and then I read your report and I realized they were all from your report. So it's really, really great to get the chance to talk to you about this.
Yeah, well, thanks for featuring the work. It's exciting to be talking to you guys about that too. So most fundamentally, an off-grid system just differs from a traditional system in that it's sort of not connected to or islanded from the main grid. So the service relationship is often between the customer and directly with a service provider without sort of a utility doing transmission or distribution in between. Sure. So on the demographic side, there's expectations, numbers that have been put out that say that about 600 million people are expected to gain access to electricity by 2030. But as a result of that, population growth may actually limit the total achieving of universal energy access in that same time frame. So there's about a billion people in the world right now that don't have access to electricity. And if you think about where population growth is taking place, most of that is happening in Southeast Asia, sub-Saharan Africa, such that by 2030 or 2040, some of the estimates suggest that almost all of the people who are still without access to electricity will be in sub-Saharan Africa by that time.
As sub-Saharan Africa is likely to be the largest market for off-grid electricity solutions, we really wanted to talk to those already doing this work in the region. We spoke to Bill Lenahan, chief executive of Zola Electric, an African solar startup with a mission to bring clean energy across five African markets: Nigeria, Tanzania, Rwanda, Cote d'Ivoire, and Ghana.
You know, there's a billion people on this planet that do not have access to energy. They don't live on a grid. They have no grid power, so they have to provision their own power in some other way.
Right.
But there's also another billion, 1.2 billion people and hundreds of millions of businesses that lack access to reliable and affordable energy.
Of course.
And these would be people that live in cities like Lagos or Mumbai. And so when we think about the market, we really think about that is the market. It's the energy access market of 2.2 billion people and hundreds of millions of businesses. Now, a part of that is the off-grid segment of a billion, and the rest is the on-grid, unreliable grid segment. So, and I think you have to, you know, you almost have to think about that in as one, but obviously how you solve those problems is different in an off-grid setting than
right.
one where you've got a lack of a reliable grid. You know, today, we've got a million users, and the vast, vast majority of those users are off-grid rural customers. Our first product line, Flex, really, that was, you know, the off-grid rural product was the first product line, and it really is the core of the business today. So our business today is heavily skewed to off-grid. Now, the markets that we serve, it depends. Tanzania is heavily skewed towards off-grid, as is Rwanda. West Africa, I'd say, is more heavily skewed towards on-grid, unreliable weak grid than off-grid, although the off-grid market is also quite substantial in those three countries.
We also connected with Maurice Peretz, CEO of PowerMe,
an off-grid home solar company aiming to electrify around 150 million households in sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah, well, that is effectively the mission, is to deliver energy access to these, broadly speaking, the billion people or so that don't have access to electricity. You know, our focus is on the sub-Saharan market, where the figure stands rather stubbornly at around 600 million, you know, despite, you know, as a percentage of the overall population numbers been going down a bit. But, you know, part of what's unique about sub-Saharan Africa is, it's experiencing a demographic boom. So whereas in the rest of the world, the problem of unelectrification is largely expected to be solved by around 2030, you know, the problem in sub-Saharan Africa is just getting more and more challenging because, you know, we're having difficulty keeping up in spite of all the progress that's been made with, you know, recent efforts at grid extension and mini grids and even the, the off-grid, you know, the birth of the off-grid sector.
You're working towards these off-grid solutions because they've been identified to present some sort of benefit as compared to their more traditional counterparts. What exactly are these benefits?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, grid infrastructure is expensive. It is extremely capital intensive. I mean, grid infrastructure projects are large. They have long life cycles. In developing countries, they often require the involvement of external players, you know, whether it be foreign banks or development finance institutions. And, that all those things represent obstacles to rapid development. So what we have an opportunity to do here with off-grid technologies is to, you know, leapfrog this traditional grid infrastructure, as well as, you know, are being able to leverage this pay-as-you-go, this financing capability. So that we deliver energy not just as a service, but as a consumer product, which is effectively what we're doing.
As you were mentioning earlier, your research has found that these off-grid systems can often be more cost-effective and sustainable for the environment than connecting to a central grid in these remote locations that have yet to gain access. How is that?
Yeah, so part of it is that you're looking at small distributed systems. So in some cases, the connection cost on a household basis can be significantly lower than actually building out poles and wires for a couple of kilometers, tens of kilometers, even hundreds of kilometers in some cases, from the sort of edge of the grid where it is now to people, particularly in rural areas. Even in urban areas where there are people that, you know, the wires go right over their house, but they may not have a connection because they can't afford it or the utility has not extended it. There's far more cost-effective solutions using off-grid solar or off-grid renewables of other kinds, where you can actually provide it's a much more nimble system. You can provide direct energy to the household, and something that we can talk a little bit more about later too is that actually these relationships these off-grid companies are building with off-grid consumers is actually has the ability to go beyond electricity and beyond kilowatt hours. And that also has cost savings as well as, you know, sort of economic development benefits on the side as well.
The opportunity at the heart of the off-grid energy market extends far beyond electricity. And what we understood from our guests are that big players are really starting to realize this. So we asked them exactly who is moving first and what exactly their presence means for the overall sector.
You mentioned a few names before, but how have you seen global energy players start to take real notice of the emerging market opportunity that these off-grid systems are presenting? And how have they acted upon it a bit more?
Yeah. So we've seen a pretty wide range of actors. And, you know, there's a bit of a common misnomer that a lot of the sort of top-down participants in this market are really participating for corporate social responsibility or sort of charity work, or, you know, this is just a nice thing to do because it looks good. And in some cases, that is true. But we see that over 3/4 of the activity of strategic investors is actually commercial in nature. And they range everywhere from, like I mentioned, some of the the oil and gas majors, some of these European utilities like ENGIE and EDF, we've seen range from some sort of manufacturers, or what we call OEMs, which are, you know, Schneider Electric or SMA or GE or Siemens. We've seen companies like Unilever and Coca-Cola. We've seen companies like TEPCO in Japan or MasterCard looking at payment processing partnerships. We've seen companies like Facebook and Microsoft express interest in this space. Telecommunications companies in sub-Saharan Africa. There's some of the Japanese trading houses and industrial firms, even some sort of multinational banks. So there's a lot of, it's a very wide range of actors that are interested in this space. And their behavior, you know, if you sort of map it along their interest in the space and the pathways through which they enter the market, whether it's through investing directly or making partnerships or investing into financial intermediaries that then invest into the space, we see that they've made a very significant dent on the total capital deployed, and their interests align with their go-to-market pathway. So it's actually quite interesting to get a sense of, you know, how they see this market, and how, you know, MasterCard may be looking at payment processing partnerships, whereas Facebook and Microsoft may be looking at funding the deployment of some of these systems because there's internet benefits. Or, you know, we might see, you know, some of these manufacturers looking to open new markets for some of their existing products or new products that they'd like to deploy.
So, Maurice, I'd like to zoom out for a second. Back in 2017, energy wasn't even in the top 10 startup sectors receiving funding in the Middle East and North Africa, which is, I know you have headquarters in the Middle East as well. That trend is largely changing. How have you seen interest and investment in off-grid electricity grow, and why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think the interest is growing. I think where we're seeing the most growth in interest is amongst energy corporates and private equity investors that have a strategic interest in either energy or the development of the African continent. And the reason for that is clearly because of the size of the market. You have, you know, as we've said, 600 million people throughout sub-Saharan Africa that, you know, the vast majority of which will only be, realistically, will only be reached with off-grid technologies. So, you know, the market is there to see. It's, you know, we know what the solution is. It's a solution that's readily available today. And it's really just a question of, you know, how do we implement and scale that solution in a way that's economically viable and yields, you know, the kinds of returns that are needed to, you know, to attract this kind of investment. But I think what most, you know, farsighted investors see is that it's really just a matter of time, right? As these technologies become less expensive, and that is what we have been seeing and what we will continue to see, is that, you know, solar photovoltaics are going to get cheaper, lithium batteries are going to get cheaper, LEDs are going to get cheaper. All of the underlying technology is going to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and that's going to make, you know, the economic viability and the scalability of this business model just improve over time. And, you know, I think it's that kind of inevitability combined with the size of the market that makes this, you know, a very, very interesting market for energy-focused investors. I think an illustrative example of the way that the energy industry is going, not just in Africa, but I think globally, is the advent of companies like Tesla and SolarCity that are producing, you know, rooftop solar panels and, you know, Tesla power walls, precisely so that people can generate and consume energy locally. And I think the trend, you know, towards fully decentralized energy, you know, mainly from solar, whether it be on-grid or off-grid, is something that's almost, again, inevitable if you look at the longer-term trends.
What do you think will be the most definable incentives for these big players putting their investment into sub-Saharan Africa in particular?
I think it's when we prove we're solving problems and we have a sustainable business.
Right.
And so, and we're already proving as an industry that we're solving problems. So to me, that just is almost status quo. We continue to solve it. And maybe importantly, vis-a-vis where we are today, is prove that we can do it in a sustainable way.
Right.
We do that. If we do that, then now what do you have? You have a massive market opportunity that is and a unique way to address it, and you've proven sustainability. Well, that's when big players, and they're already starting to wake up to this.
And when big players, quote unquote, wake up, the money seems to start pouring in. In 2018, total investment into off-grid energy was over $500 million. And for entrepreneurs like Maurice and Bill hoping to connect off-grid communities, this has been a welcome surge, especially as 79% of total disclosed investment since 2010 has gone to the African continent.
But the investment gap between off-grid solutions and the rest of the energy sector is staggering, and it remains one of the central barriers to development. So we asked Ben what he believes the cause of this investment gap could be.
So the sector is evolving really quickly. So it is still early days on a global scale. If you think about how many potential customers there are and how many untapped markets and customer segments and technologies that have yet to be deployed. But the sector has been around for a long time. And I think there's, you know, our estimates are that there's about $1.7 billion in disclosed investment that have already been deployed into the space. Over $500 million of that was in last year alone in 2018. And $1.2 billion of that $1.7 total happened in the last 3 years, since the beginning of 2016. So we've seen and this is all investments going directly at the corporate level into companies that are deploying these solutions. So this isn't, you know, World Bank agreements with national governments. Those are separate totals. So if you think about how much interest and activity there is in this space, it is early days, but I think the sector has really started to mature. This, you know, last year was really a banner year for the investment landscape in this space, and we expect that this trend will continue. There's been efforts working towards electrifying off-grid populations for a long time now, but most of that has come through traditional grid infrastructure, which has been expensive and heavily subsidized. That has not been the case in the emerging world. And as a result of that, there's sort of been this vacuum that off-grid solutions have been seeking to fill, and they're becoming increasingly cost competitive. But this is still a relatively new space. So we see our research suggests that the investment landscape is growing quite significantly. We're starting to see some really impressive numbers for capital that's being deployed directly into companies that are deploying off-grid energy access solutions. But there's still billions of dollars between where we are now and sort of electrifying all of the off-grid people in the world.
I'm interested, if I were a potential investor who realized the amazing opportunity, both commercially and good for humanity, that this presents, what should I make of the fact that this vast range of companies are getting involved? How does this add to my investment opportunities?
Yeah, so it's a bit unknown at this stage. What we've sort of found is that while these companies have made a pretty significant dent and made a number of partnerships and investments and activity in this space, it's still pretty early days for the sector as a whole and for their interests. So for the most part, most of them are still dipping their toes in the water relative to their total ability to participate or their sort of longer term vision. So it's a little bit uncertain exactly how strategic participation will impact this market. But there is, we do see that there's a significant impact from them already being there. And we see what they're looking to do. So if you're looking to invest alongside them, there's opportunities to say, okay, we have an existing customer relationship, and we know that the average value or average revenue per customer is X. How much deeper beyond that can we go if we stack these other services on top? We stack these other adjacent goods on top of this existing connection. And there's a little bit of question marks around how deep that really goes. Nobody really knows yet. But the fact that this is sort of the interest of the utility-minded strategic investors looking at this space, that tells us that it's higher than, you know, where it is now. So that, you know, if you're looking to look to invest into this space, there's an understanding that we can deepen customers' lifetime values on top of these existing electricity connections. And that's an upside for investors looking at the space.
And Bill, why exactly is the off-grid space positioned as such a vast opportunity for investors?
You know, I think about interest relative to opportunity. And you know, to solve the energy access problem across the globe is a $1 trillion need,
right,
to solve that. And so when you think about the interest today relative to a trillion, it's not large at all. It's actually quite small.
Yes.
But it is growing. It is growing. The interest is growing. And the interest will continue to, has grown and will continue to grow. The stronger it'll grow stronger as the industry grows, as it continues to solve problems, develop technology around how to solve those problems, and then really importantly, deliver a sustainable business. And that's really where the industry is right now from an inflection point. The energy access problem, if it's not solved by businesses that are sustainable,
right,
it'll never happen. So that's really where the obligation, I believe, of our industry is right now, is to prove profitability, prove sustainability. These companies can stand on their own. And by the way, you're not just proving it to investors, but you're proving it to your customers, right? Because when we sell a product, we stand behind that product and we say, you know, we're gonna service this for 5 years. And by the way, if you want more, you can buy a longer term service agreement. When your battery dies, we're here to fix that for you. So we're promising to our customers as well as to investors that we're going to be around. Well, the only way to be around is if you build a self-sustaining business. But for the interest to go from hundreds of millions of dollars of interest to billions of dollars of interest, we got to prove sustainability of the business model. You know, I think what's important is for our industry to decide and the players in the industry to decide, what are they? You know, what is the real true core competency of the business? We believe our core competency is we're a technology platform. We can go into any energy access market and solve any problem. It doesn't matter if it's rural or it's urban or it's consumer or business. If you want to power your necessities, lights, radios, phone chargers, televisions, or you want to power productive use, that we can solve that problem for you.
So Ben, in terms of this value stacking business model, do you see this as potentially a feedback loop that could make this technology even more cost-effective by helping to build the economy of the community that it's trying to branch into?
Yeah, so it definitely goes both ways in some cases. There are a lot of cost synergies, and we've started to see some of our strategic investors that are looking at this space. So that's everyone from Total and Shell to sort of European utilities like ENGIE or EDF, some IPPs. Iberdrola is a good example in that case, EDP. So some of these companies, what they're looking to do is to partner or to make investments in companies that are working in specific parts of the value chain for off-grid solar. And the vast majority of investment in off-grid solar has happened through the pay-as-you-go business model, which is the easy way to sort of understand that is to think about a lease-to-own model or even thinking about topping up a prepaid mobile phone. But in the sort of value chain of the pay-as-you-go solar network, you see stacked value on top of each of those different phases. So products, retail, finance, and service. On top of that, each of those has opportunities for selling other products, like what Unilever is looking to do. If you're financing these systems already and have a sort of data-driven relationship with these customers, you know, you can see cost savings in selling insurance or doing other consumer lending or clearing transactions. You know, if you're doing service already, you can think about marketing and branding with other brands. You can think about selling data. So all these things that would be very costly or cost prohibitive to do in these contexts and to these customers on their own are now becoming, you know, more economically competitive and sort of already existing in the same channel or in the same customer utility relationship that's being built.
Of course, one of the biggest hurdles for entrepreneurs in the early stages of development is securing financing. We asked Bill and Maurice exactly how they navigated this challenge.
you know, when I started at the company, we were financing all of our customers off our own balance sheet. And that's a really, we're not a bank, and yeah. we're not built like a bank. And that's a really bad solution for us. And it's a really bad solution for the customer, because the customer has to pay our cost of capital, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when I joined, the end goal always was to bring in local currency, local banks to finance the customers direct. Why? Because that's their business. They're better at it than us, than anybody. That's their industry. But they also have a cost of capital advantage. That was the goal. But we had to kind of take our time to do it, because at the end of the day, we had a customer that this was the first loan they'd ever taken. There was no credit history for that customer, and a bank was never going to finance. So we had to prove out that these customers will ultimately pay for energy. We felt pretty strongly they would. It's so mission critical. It's so impactful. And by the way, at the end of the day, it does so much from an economic perspective that it would make sense for people, if they had it, to continue to pay for it. And that's exactly what we've seen. So over time, we've been able on this journey to bring in, you know, institutional bank capital. So in Tanzania, it was all our own. Then we brought in some impact high net worth families from the United States to put a facility together to do a larger receivable facility and finance the customers direct and prove out the credit. Well, that credit started proving out in West Africa with the help of EDF and Mitsubishi Bank and Meridian and others. We have now a facility which includes local currency bank debt that is financing the customers. In Nigeria, we are going to have the first direct bank lending platform. So when we develop a relationship with a customer, when we solve their problem, that product will be financed direct from the bank. It won't be financed from us. So, and by the way, that's taken, you know, 7-8 years to get to here. And all of it has been around proving the credit. So that's the future.
Africa it's a very large continent, and it has a relatively low population density and a lot of, you know, geographic obstacles. So, you know, you have a relatively high cost associated with distributing hardware to rural communities with a low population density. It's just an inherently expensive venture, particularly when you're selling to customers that are largely low income and have a relatively, you know, limited ability to pay. So that's number one. The second, you know, to follow on from that is that, you know, as relatively inexpensive of these as these systems have become in recent years, you know, in general, our customers still can't afford to pay for them upfront in cash. So we have to finance it for them. So that means that at least at the outset, we're extending credit to individuals that we know, you know, relatively little about, and so that you know, there is the credit risk. And ensuring that, you know, we actually get paid, because when we say, you know, we tend to say that we've sold a solar home system, but in reality, we always have to be mindful that really what we've done is we've originated a loan, and we need to, in order to get paid back, you know, we need to deliver a very high quality product and a high quality service, and doing that while maintaining the cost low, getting back to the first point, is a challenge.
So we turn to Ben for insight on how the sector on a larger scale is likely to move forward.
We do have a few sort of roadmaps or sort of roadblocks that may pose a bit of a challenge. And one of those is what we're calling unbundling. So the sector right now, as I mentioned, has this existing value chain. And right now it's kind of in the process of separating it's a very vertically integrated space, and that's changing. And as a result of that, these companies, which already have to sort of finance all of their sales, their hardware companies, their software companies, their retail companies, their consumer finance institutions, their asset managers, it's a bit of an identity crisis in some cases for them to say, as we unbundle, which piece of that value chain do we choose to specialize in? Or what does it look like for us to do all of them well? Is that possible? How do we do that? And I think the second piece is that a lot of our research showed that there's a pretty decent amount of capital concentration in across some of the top companies in key geographies like in East Africa, in key technologies, so solar home systems, which are essentially off-grid residential solar for off-grid households have received the lion's share of investment. And as a result of that, there's sort of a second wave of companies that may sort of seek to sort of reinvent their business model or to do things a little bit differently. But we may see a bit of investor caution in 2019 as they sort of wait to see these companies that have been heavily capitalized seek to sort of move ahead in the market and seek to demonstrate profitability and demonstrate the depth of customer value, answer some of those bigger questions.
Maurice, I'm really curious as to your use of the word inevitable when it comes to describing the future of off-grid, because another figure I came across in my research was that by 2030, it's estimated that 71% of new electricity connections will be provided by off-grid or mini-grid solutions. So from what you're seeing, from the rate of change in the size of the market that you see, is it, you know, how do we get to this point that off-grid has pretty much changed the face of the larger energy market?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, at least in Africa, there's really not much of an alternative. I think that, you know, the IEA has done studies on this, and there's a pretty interesting graphic that shows, you know, the lowest cost technology to reach the various, you know, currently off-grid communities in sub-Saharan Africa. You know, the three options being grid extension, mini-grids, and off-grid technology. So, you know, fully distributed solar home systems, which is what we do. And, you know, what you see very clearly is that the vast majority of those folks are going to be reached through off-grid solutions. That is the lowest cost way to reach them. So that's why I say that it's kind of inevitable, because, right, you know, the market just sort of, you know, dictates that that's the way that it's going to play out. And, you know, the potential for future cost savings in solar home systems, I think, are greater because of these declines in the underlying, you know, component costs, which is, you know, just going to accelerate that process. Additionally, I think that companies like ourselves, you know, this is still a relatively new sector, and, you know, with new companies that are, you know, learning every day how to be more effective and cost efficient. And I think that we're going to get better at doing our jobs, and we're going to find ways to make the business more scalable and to reach more people more quickly. So I think all of those things, you know, are going to accelerate this trend towards, you know, delivery of off-grid solutions as opposed to on-grid.
Just like Maurice, Bill also held a similar view for where he sees the energy sector heading.
One, I think that clean energy is inevitable. Solar energy, for example, has already proven its cost effectiveness versus fossil fuels and other measures. So the adoption of that is unstoppable at this point. So that'll be one big trend. I believe that the other big trend will be distributed, because distributed meaning, you know, solving this not with centralized production and distribution, but solving it also, you know, at a node level, within either a mini grid or you know, on the home or on premise, because of the ability to more effectively finance those, but also their cost effectiveness and their overall effectiveness, not just on a standalone basis, but how that system can engage with the grid and solve the grid's problem. And there is even a more compelling argument in emerging markets where the grid is highly unreliable and unaffordable. So I think that clean energy, unstoppable, distributed energy, in my opinion, too compelling for it not to be a big part of the game down the road.
So, Ben, your team has identified the off-grid clean energy market as one of what you've called the four transformations of power. Could you say a bit more about what you mean by these transformations of power and why you think off-grid energy will have such a large role in the upcoming energy transition?
Sure. Yeah, so those transformations of power that Wood Mackenzie has identified are decarbonization, decentralization, vehicle electrification, and energy access. And if you think about how the entire energy landscape is changing towards electrification, towards low carbon energy, towards the influence of distributed energy resources and, you know, vehicles which can participate in an electricity market, which is something that, that hasn't been true in the past, you can sort of base this on a common unit of kilowatt hours or of electricity consumption. And if you think about energy access, there are about a billion people in the world, like I said, that don't have access to electricity at all. There's about another billion people in the world that don't have access to reliable electricity. And then if you think about the amount of people in the world that don't have access to clean energy, this is a fundamental piece of the puzzle. So if you're looking to have an integrated view of the energy transition, you can't ignore a quarter of the world's population who live in markets that are growing faster than the Western world. So our expectations now are that we'll see renewables are about 7% roughly of global energy electricity consumption. And we see that has the ability to rise a little bit more, but this will be strongly driven by emerging markets as their electricity demand grows far faster than the rest of the world. And it's such a significant portion of the population, and it has the ability to sort of skip some of the inefficient ways that things have been done in the past, that this is a fundamental piece of the energy transition.
What are you most excited about in the opportunity that this presents? What do you think might be the most exciting outcome?
I think for me, the fact that we see a pretty customer-centric, a unified customer-centric interest in this space from a lot of top-down players that understand the value proposition, that understand the opportunity, and that understand that, you know, this can go beyond sort of basic electricity. This is a fundamental reimagining or reevaluation of the utility business model. And we're already seeing this, you know, we in our space, we sort of call this utility 2.0 evolution, going from the way the utilities used to be, which was they generate electricity, it goes across transmission and distribution lines, and the customer is a demand sink for that. It's a source to sink model. It's one way, and it's very simple. And the utility 2.0 sort of revolution, or the paradigm change that we saw before, was that, you know, now electricity sales can be bidirectional. Customers can generate their own electricity and sell it back to the utility, and they can do all sorts of things like controlling their demand or changing it to adjust to when the utility is producing electricity, things like that. And this is sort of a, you know, if I dare say, sort of a utility 3.0 evolution, where this is an incredibly customer-centric approach from utility-minded companies that understand that the utility customer relationship and the utility business model can go beyond basic kilowatt hours. And the fact that there is such a large addressable market for this, and that some of these lessons could actually be applied to existing, you know, sort of the home markets of some of these electricity players, some of these oil and gas majors that are getting into the electricity space. We just saw actually Shell saying that they want to be the largest power provider in the world in the next 15 Wow. years. There's sort of a fundamental change going on here on a global scale. And this segment of the energy market is, in some senses, on the leading edge of that. And that's the piece that's most exciting to me.
Maurice agreed that this is just the beginning of off-grid's impact on the larger energy sector.
I think an illustrative example of the way that the energy industry is going, not just in Africa, but I think globally, is the advent of companies like Tesla and SolarCity that are producing, you know, rooftop solar panels and, you know, Tesla power walls, precisely so that people can generate and consume energy locally. And I think the trend, you know, towards fully decentralized energy, you know, mainly from solar, whether it be on-grid or off-grid, is something that's almost, again, inevitable if you look at the longer-term trends. I think that it's not beyond the realm of possibility that, you know, in, you know, say 10 years from now, you know, we will be selling solar home systems to off-grid consumers in sub-Saharan Africa that don't look that different from, you know, today's, say, Tesla Powerwalls, because I think that the pace at which the cost of technology is going to decrease, will mean that, you know, in the very near future, we will actually be able to, you know, finance those systems will get cheaper, and we will be able to finance those kinds of systems for, you know, relatively low income consumers in sub-Saharan Africa. And we're going to see the sort of convergence of the technologies between today's, you know, quite low power solar home systems that we're selling to off-grid consumers in sub-Saharan Africa today, and the decentralized solutions that are being sold in rich countries.
We'd like to extend a massive thank you to our wonderful guests, Ben Attia, Bill Lenihan, and Maurice Peretz.
In our next episode, we'll be looking at the future of food production and consumption. With the UN estimating that in order to feed the world's population, by 2050, global food production will have to increase by close to 70%, and yet somehow also be environmentally sustainable at the same time.
Our guests will enlighten us on the work they're currently doing to make this ideal a reality. From a company developing plant-based substitutes for meat and dairy products, to a data-driven organization striving to collectively reduce food waste at scale.
As always, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.